This is PhotoBizX episode number 230, and today we're covering sales, selling, pricing, and how to basically make more money selling photography wall art. And the good news is today's guest has done it all. He teaches it, and he's designed a product to make selling even easier. I'm talking about Chris from flauntwhatyougot.com and Swift Galleries. That interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. I have got a big and exciting episode for you today, the interview with Chris Scott. We dive into a topic that I get asked a lot about inside the members group. It's a popular topic in there. People are always asking, or photographers and members are asking, you know, what do we price our products at? What is a better way to sell? What is an easy way to make more sales, generate more profits? So we're covering all that, including how to price your actual prints. I'm going to cover that with Chris Scott in just a minute. In addition to that interview with Chris, I've also got a short segment with wedding videographer Dave Cowling from D&M Photo Films in Sydney. He has just come up with a new idea, well, a year or two ago, so it's in the process of being launched right now, where he is wholesaling wedding videography to wedding photographers to make it easy for us to sell wedding videography to the clients that want both photography and video if you don't happen to supply video as well, like me. At this stage, it's only for Australian photographers, but I've got a feeling that once you hear this, I wouldn't be surprised if this sort of service pops up wherever you're based. So that's coming up after the interview with Chris Scott. Before we get into all that, I did have some bad news this week. A good friend of mine and associate photographer, Corey, who works with us regularly photographing weddings, engagement shoots, some portrait sessions, and some of our commercial work as well, he was badly burnt in a chemical explosion, I guess you'd call it. His full-time day job is in a powder coating company, or with a powder coating company, and he happened to be on the shop floor, the workshop floor, and there was a chemical explosion which caused a fire, and he was very close to that. His clothes were on fire. He had two jumpers on. It was freezing cold this morning, and they were both alight, and he had to sort of get those up over his face. Luckily, he was wearing glasses, but he's got bad burns to his arms, his leg, his stomach, and a few other areas as well. So it was terrible news to get. He says, well, we're told he's going to make a full recovery. It's going to be a long, slow recovery. He's in a lot of pain, but he's got his eyesight. His face is okay. And yeah, it's just going to be a long road. But the reason I'm telling you this, or bringing this up for this episode of the podcast, is although Corey shoots for us at Impact as an associate shooter, he does also have some of his own clients. And the very first thing he asked me is, Andrew, do you have this particular date free? I've got a wedding booked. There's no way I can cover it. And of course, I mean, after I checked my diary and saw that I did have the day free, I'm absolutely going to be shooting this wedding for Corey. But, you know, it begs the question, do you have systems or something in place in case something bad happens to you? I mean, if you get sick or you're in an accident or you get called away for something that you can't put off and you have to be there, you know, do you have something in place if you were to miss a shoot? And I think I'm really talking to wedding photographers here, because most portrait style shoots or type shoots can be rescheduled, but weddings can't. And I know for me, I do have a network of photographers, not only associate photographers that shoot for us at Impact Images, but I've also got a network of other local photographers that I would call on if I got stuck. And above and beyond that, I'm part of the AIPP, and I know that I'd be able to find some other photographer to cover whatever part of the day or full wedding if it came to that. You know, and even if it meant that multiple photographers would have to cover different parts of the day, I'm sure that I'd be able to get through somehow. In addition to that, I have income protection insurance, and I know that depending on the premium that I pay, it's going to dictate how much I get from that insurance and also how long I have to wait before that insurance kicks in. So I think for me, it's around 6 weeks. I'd have to survive for 6 weeks without any income before that insurance money starts to come in, that income protection insurance. So yeah, I know for Corey, he will be covered by workers' compensation, and that type of insurance coverage is set up by his employer over at the powder coating company. So he's covered there while he's going through his healing process. But as a self-employed photographer, you know, I don't have workers' compensation, or I'm guessing that you don't either. So do you have something in place? I mean, it's not something that you do want to think about, but I think it's something that we all need to think about. You know, what would happen to your mortgage repayments and whatever other bills that you must have paid if you're unable to work for any length of time? And even on a more micro level than that, what if you can't get to a particular wedding? You know, even if it's just one wedding, one weekend, do you have something in place that's going to allow you to sleep at night and not have to worry about that? They're not things you want to think about, but you have to. If you run a small business, if you run a business and you have clients, you've got to have something in place if something does happen, something unforeseen. Anyway, I'm wishing all the best to Corey, and I hope he makes a speedy recovery. And I think what happened to Corey is a great reminder that, you know, we really do have to have something in place to cover ourselves in case the unimaginable does happen.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In the last episode, I interviewed headshot photographer Maurice Yeager. He's part of the headshot crew and works closely with Peter Hurley while running his own business in Europe. And the big topic that we covered in that episode was finding and booking and attracting new clients through LinkedIn. And it really does seem like an untapped social media platform for photographers. And Maurice was testament to that fact. I love the way he laid out exactly the approach that he takes to target or find and target specific clients using LinkedIn and email to generate shoots and bookings. It was enlightening. From the feedback that I've gotten inside the members Facebook group, it was a popular interview. So if you are shooting headshots or if you are trying to attract commercial clients to your photography business, have a listen to that interview if you haven't heard it. I know you're going to pick up some great tips. I personally don't use LinkedIn. You know, the commercial photography isn't a big part of my business, but I know that if I was focusing on headshots and commercial photography, I would be in there and I would be using it just based on what Maurice had to share.
PhotoBizX.com. Real advice, real strategies, and real ideas to build your photography business.
We're going to jump into this interview with Chris Scott in just a second. If you are hearing this announcement, it means you're listening to the free podcast episode, which is absolutely fine. But I want to give you a heads up and remind you or let you know, if you're unaware, that you will only be hearing half the interview today with Chris. I do save the second half, usually the best half, for premium members. I'm going to tell you exactly how you can get access to that in just a second. But one of the questions that comes up regularly is, what, you know, why do you have a premium membership? Why do you save half the interview for premium members only when most podcasts are free? Well, the big reason is there are no ads on PhotoBizX. There are no advertisers. I don't have a product to sell. I'm not trying to promote anything else. And the whole idea of PhotoBizX is that I'm putting out content that's worth paying for. You know, there's no hidden agenda or message or something that I'm trying to sell you in addition to the podcast. The podcast is the premium product. It is the content. And it's the reason I can ask the kind of questions that I do about how much photographers are earning, how they're generating their income, exactly what they're doing to find the clients they are, down to the copy that they're using in their ads, how they're pricing their exact products, how much they're making per shoot, how many clients they're photographing each week. I can ask all those questions because there is no hidden agenda. The idea is to find something for you every single episode that you can implement into your business to make it more profitable, to make it better. And the minute I stop generating content that's worth paying for, then I expect you to cancel your premium membership, because then I won't be doing my job well. And it means if it's no use to you, I can totally understand that you don't want to keep a premium membership. And that's the way it is. So unless I'm putting out content that's worth paying for, I don't expect to have a premium membership. And, you know, that's how it has been from day one. And that's why I rely on the premium membership to make the whole podcast possible. I mean, this is something that I do in addition to my photography business. And unless the podcast was able to pay for itself from day one, then there was never going to be a podcast. So that was, I guess, a test to myself and also motivation to get the kind of content that I know that I would have loved when I started as a photographer. You know, and I've told this story on other podcasts when I've been asked about why I started PhotoBizX. And it goes back to when I started my photography business, I just didn't know what I didn't know. I mean, one of the most basic things I was unaware of was that I could upsell my wedding albums after the wedding day. And when I say upsell, I mean add extra pages or sides into the album above and beyond what the clients paid for. I didn't know I was able to do that. I went to a seminar and it was with Jerry Gahonis, and he explained exactly how to do that. And then, wow, that was like a light switch going on. That one tip allowed me to go part-time in my full-time job and eventually go full-time with photography, all because of that one tip, because that generated over $1,000 extra per wedding that I was booking. It was just incredible. And then from there, I went to other seminars and workshops and joined the AIPP, and it took months and years to learn the things that I learned. And I thought, there's got to be a better way. And there is. It's the podcast. It's where you get a photography business workshop delivered to you every single week, where you get to learn the kind of things it took me years and years and years to learn in my business, and what it takes most photographers years and years to learn. You can shortcut all that and become more profitable a lot quicker. So back to Chris and today's interview. You're going to love this one. The part that I am leaving for premium members is on pricing. Chris goes into detail about how you should be pricing your prints, what they should be priced at. We're looking at cost of goods, cost of sales, and working out exactly what you should be charging for your wall art. And then we go into more selling and generating bigger sales. So that's all for premium members. If you want to hear the full interview today with Chris, head over to photobizx.com/try. And for $1, you can get a trial membership for 30 days. If you become a fully fledged member, you get to hear the full interview with Chris. You get access to the full back catalog. You'll get an invite to the premium members secret Facebook group, only for members, for active members. And you'll love what you find inside that group. You'll get an invite to join the mastermind groups and access to the spreadsheet there, so you can become a part of a mastermind group yourself. So it's all there, part of that trial membership. If you love what you're hearing and love what you're getting after 30 days, stay on with your membership. It does go to $20 per month. But there are no contracts. You can cancel at any time. The minute I stop delivering content that's worth paying for, cancel your membership. That's what I want you to do. All right, photobizx.com/try. Let's get into this interview with Chris.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is boudoir photographer and entrepreneur Chris Scott from Colorado in the US. Chris was a full-time wedding and portrait photographer with his wife, Adrienne. And 8 years ago, he founded Preveel, an iPad app for portrait photographers. And a few years after that, Preveel gave way to Swift Galleries. It's a wall art sales tool for pro photographers. These days, Chris and Adrienne split their time between photography and their business solutions for photographers. You can see their photography work at Flaunt Boudoir, and I'm rapt to have Chris with me now. And the plan is to talk sales and selling. Chris, welcome, mate.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. I really appreciate it.
Mate, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Maybe we can start with you telling me and the listener a little bit about your business and, you know, what your life looks like at the moment. Is it photography or is it all Swift Galleries and other things?
Yeah, man. You know, unfortunately, we don't get to shoot that much anymore. Swift Galleries takes up a giant piece of our time. We also run a couple of other things, an in-person sales course called Salesographer, and a payment plan app called paykit.io. So between those three businesses, and I feel like I'm always spinning up some sort of quote unquote side project just for fun, we just don't get to shoot very much anymore. But my time is now spent doing stuff like this, actually, and then doing a lot of education for our members, our Swift Galleries members, whether it be teaching them how to use the app itself or just a ton of sales education. That's kind of my area of expertise, is specifically in-person sales and wall art sales. So I do a lot of education around those two topics. And yeah, that's how I spend most of my days at this point.
Is it Adrienne? Am I saying that correctly? How does she fit into the business?
Yeah, so Adrienne actually runs all of our support. So we kind of joke around that Adrienne does our support. And then we've got this guy named Cyrus, who lives in Indiana. And he's one of our co-founders. And he's the CTO. He does all of the tech stuff. So he does all the coding. Adrienne does all the support, and I kind of do everything else. So whether it's marketing, education, outreach, any of that stuff, I kind of pick up the slack on.
Okay, cool. I'm a little bit familiar with Swift Galleries, and I want to get into that in a minute and the sales side of things. But you also mentioned Salesographer. I had a little bit of a look at that, and I know that's around teaching and showing photographers how to get better sales. What was the other thing you mentioned? Was it SalesKit.io?
PayKit. PayKit.io. Yeah. And it's a really simple payment plan app. So when we were shooting full time, we had Successware and it was a really great tool, but we ended up using other things for almost all of it. The only thing that we were using toward the end was just this payment processing thing. This, you could basically set up a payment plan, put in the credit card information, and then, you know, it'd be charged automatically, which was really cool. But we were paying like $99 a month for this full suite of tools and only using this one feature. And I'm not actually lying about this. This is totally true. For the last, I think, 9 months that we used that, we only had one payment plan running through it, and it was $99 a month. So we were getting paid, you know, from this client, $99 a month, and we were turning around, you know, and then paying fees on top of that and turning around and just giving that straight over to Successware. So that was something that, you know, once Prevail and Swift Galleries really took off and we started to have a lot of these users who were doing very well with it, getting, you know, multiple $1,000 sales pretty consistently, I started looking at what other pieces of the puzzle are there to running a fluid and kind of streamlined business. And that has always been a pain point for me, was that payment processing. And, you know, there are lots of tools out there that do this, but it's one small part of this huge suite of tools that I think a lot of photographers don't even need. It's actually kind of the same philosophy behind Swift Galleries. We focus very specifically on in-person sales and wall art sales. And while there are other things that you could and will need to do, we want to be able to do this one thing and do it really well. So PayKit is the same kind of idea there. It is solely a payment plan app. So let's say you just wrapped up an in-person sales meeting, you got a $3,000 sale, and the client hesitant, and they're like, I don't know, this is a lot more money than I thought I was going to spend. And let's say you want to offer a payment plan. In this case, you could say, hey, you know what, we could split that up into two or three payments for you, and we'll take care of all of it tonight. So what you would do is just fire up PayKit, and you would put in the total that they owe you, say how many times you want to split it, and what day it needs to be basically done by. And then you put in their credit card information and you hit go, and then it just takes care of it from that point forward. So it charges the card on that schedule and you don't have to think about it again. So it's kind of this, we refer to it as a set it and forget it payment plan app, where you put it in there and then never have to deal with it again, which is pretty nice.
Do you encourage then the photographer to deliver the goods before the payment plan has run its course? Are you guaranteed to get paid? Or if they default on their credit card, you still don't get paid. So you wait until it's paid in full before you deliver on the goods.
Yeah. So the way we typically talk about this when we teach this stuff is, number one, absolutely make sure at least your costs are covered. So I am a huge proponent in a 25% cost of sale or better. So for anybody listening, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Really, what I mean when I say that is, for every dollar that your business makes, you don't want spending more than 25 cents on the product that you sold. So I'm a huge proponent in having even at least a 25% cost of sale, if not better than that. So for that, I say, make sure that at least your costs are covered. Typically, that's not going to be an issue, because we don't really want to see people splitting payments up more than three payments. So even if you're at four, you should be getting paid enough to cover your cost. But if you go, you know, fewer payments than that, you're even better. And I think that this comes down to the photographer and the client themselves. And this is a play it by ear kind of thing. So when we did payment plans, we delivered products as soon as our costs were covered. And I think we did payment plans for 5 or 6 years. And I can only think of one client who screwed us over, but I still remember her name and I still curse her silently under my breath. But for the amount of money that we made back by offering payment plans, it was absolutely worth it. It still bothers me that that person screwed us over. But for the most part, we did a really good job of playing it by ear and saying, you know, and just kind of making it up as we go. If we had a good vibe about the client, if we were already good friends, hey, yeah, we'll deliver the products as soon as, you know, we hit this point. We don't say as soon as our costs are covered, but, you know, after the first or second payment or whatever. If we didn't get a good vibe about them, then we'd say, yeah, we'll deliver the products as soon as the payment plan is done. It tends to be a bit of a moot point, because if you're going to do a payment plan, two payments, maybe three. And beyond that two payment mark, you're really looking at about the time that those products are going to be coming in from your lab anyway, unless you're holding off on even ordering them.
I wouldn't be ordering until my costs are covered. That's the way I would do business.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But if you're taking half down up front, then your costs are covered that day.
Absolutely. Yeah. So is this only available to photographers in the States?
it is, unfortunately, having to deal with international tax law and making sure that we're, you know, kosher there is a nightmare. So right now we're just the United States. It's definitely something we hope to open up overseas, though.
Okay, so not even Canada either at this stage?
No, just the U.S. right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just on the topic still, just for the U.S. listeners, with this system, so what does a photographer pay you guys?
Yeah, so it's $5 a month.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's a bit better than 90-something.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's no percentages, nothing off percentage of sales, nothing.
Yeah, no commissions, nothing like that. We do $5 a month. That gets you, I think, 3 active payment plans. And then it's just kind of a tiered payment from there up to unlimited if you, you know, contact us and we work out how many you think you're going to need and all of that.
See, I love the idea of this system, but is it an app, is it? Or is it a contractual agreement? So they are giving you permission to take money from their credit card on these specific dates. Is that the way it works?
Yeah. So what you'll want to do is, anybody listening has a contract that they're using in place. We do cover the payment plan agreement, though. So there's something that needs to be checked that's, you know, I agree to these terms and conditions or whatever, and it's all covered in there. And they're agreeing to those at the time they submit that.
Okay. So you just enter the details into the app and then the fees or the payments come out automatically on these predetermined dates.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And it goes through Stripe. So it's all secure. We don't ever touch any financial data. The money never even touches our account. It doesn't get routed through us in any way. It goes straight to the photographer's Stripe account and then therefore into their bank account.
Great. Well, I'd love to see something like this in Australia and other countries as well. It sounds really cool.
I got to work on that, man.
You do. Let's talk a little bit about Swift Galleries, because I know that's going to probably be the backbone of your talk about sales and selling. Maybe you can explain, I guess, for the listener that isn't aware of what it is, what it does, and how it works.
Yeah, cool. So Swift Galleries started as just a wall art design and sales tool. So basically, it allows you to upload your clients' photos. It's all web-based, so it works across all devices, all operating system, all of that stuff. And that's from coming, you had mentioned at the beginning of this interview, that we started with the iPad app Preveal. That was one of the big kind of hurdles that we dealt with Preveal, was that it was just on the iPad. And if we wanted to get it off of the iPad, we would have to develop on multiple fronts. Anytime we updated one, we would have to update all of the other versions of it, or flavors of it, if you will. So putting it on the web makes it a lot easier for us. You know, we create one version of it, we update one version of it, and it just goes out in real time. So what it allows you to do, though, is you're going to upload your client's photos, and then you can design wall art galleries for your clients on their walls at the right size. So we have this really simple and slick way to upload a client's room photo and then calibrate it so that everything's being shown at the right size. So at that point, you can choose a bunch of different templates. You can create your own templates. And when I refer to templates, I'm just talking about layouts on the wall, and then fill it with your client's images. So it sounds really basic, but when you get down to it, being able to show a client what their images are going to look like at the right size in their home beforehand, before they ever spend a dime, before they have to, you know, start poking holes in their walls with nails and everything, is huge. It's an incredibly effective selling process, being able to say, hey, look, this is what this is going to look like. And, you know, I kind of talk about this when I do our webinars. I talk about this idea of the concept of show versus tell. If you put yourself in your client's shoes and a client thinks an 8x10 is big, right? They're like, oh, that it's a giant 8x10. Or my friend Jared over at shoot.edit calls it the 8x10 of your dreams. You know, they think of this as like this massive 8x10. So if you say, hey, I think a 30x40 is going to look great over that fireplace, like, your client is going to say, I think you're a crazy person and you need to leave. Like, you're just trying to take all of my money. But if you can then instead just show them and say, hey, you know what? I think this would look great in that spot over your fireplace. Well, guess what? A 30x40 does look great, you know, over a standard fireplace. And a client can understand that. They can relate to that. They can visualize that so much better than you just trying to say, hey, I think that this size, you know, looks good. So that's kind of the main part of Swift Galleries, is this designer. That's the heart of Swift Galleries. And then since launching it, we've built out this entire in-person sales workflow as well. So in Swift Galleries, you can now do your slideshow. So basically a full in-person sales meeting, a slideshow, the call, you can do a compare side-by-side images. Then you go into the designer itself and show them the wall art that you pre-designed for them. And then from there, you can do what we call add-ons, which is basically anything that's not wall art. And those are all saved. You can save your add-ons in the app so that you don't have to put that stuff in, you know, on the fly. And then also go through the checkout process right there in Swift Galleries. And it's the same idea as PayKit, where we don't take any commissions. We don't charge any extra fee and all of that. So, you know, I mean, I'm biased, but it's a very slick tool. I wish we had it when we were shooting.
Cool. I guess the biggest thing that stands out to me is, how do you get the client's photos? Like, how do you get the photos of their couch in their lounge room or their fireplace or their dining room where they're thinking about having these photos? How do you get those images?
Yeah. So I like this question because it starts to really play into a much bigger topic, which is this topic of setting expectations. So for us, we hear this a lot. Like, I just can't get my clients to do it. And then we'll get an email. Hey, I can't get my clients to do this. I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep using this because nobody wants to do it. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I go over and I look at their website, and there's nothing there about wall art. There's nothing there about their sales process. There's nothing to set expectations or to guide a client through what they're about to go through. So I think the number one thing that you can do is to set that expectation up front. And, you know, this idea that, like, this sounds worse than I really mean it, but don't ask for the room photo. Tell them you need the room photo. You know, there's a difference between, like, hey, if you don't mind, could you send this over? Or, hey, we're going to have your planning meeting on this day. Before that day, I need you to send this over to me. And when you're setting the expectation on your website and your blog and social media, basically, we kind of preach this idea that everywhere someone sees your work, they need to see the product that you want them to buy. Just period. Because this is going to set you apart in their mind and in the market as the person to go to for this type of product. So if my potential client is coming to my website and they see a top level portfolio item called custom wall art galleries, and then they skip over to my blog and every single blog post has a wall art mockup for that session. You know, this is what I loved about this session. I think that this layout will look perfect in their home, you know, blah, 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 right? And then social media, same thing. They get on Facebook and they just see post after post after post of me saying, oh, I loved this gallery for this client, or just went and installed this gallery for this client. So it becomes painfully obvious that this is what people come to us for. And then when you take that kind of the full context, the full client experience, and you realize that none of these steps live in a vacuum, then these things become a lot easier. When I send that email that says, hey, we've got your planning meeting coming up in 2 weeks, I need you to get me this photo beforehand, you know, and it explains to them how to take a picture of their room. Well, that's not like, that's weird. Why do you need that? Like, of course you need that. Like, I see these all over your website, your blog, and social media, you know? So I think that's number one. The very most important thing is make sure you're setting those expectations up front. And then none of these things seem weird, you know? So this is another thing that we talk about a lot in the process, is when you get to the planning meeting, kind of leading with this question of, tell me where in your home you want to display the work that we're going to create for you. You know, so tell me where in the home do you want to display your wall art? So we talk about how our process is not a salesy process. It's this process that doesn't feel like sales. But when I get to that point and I tell people, you should be asking people, where do they want to put their wall art? They're like, I don't know. My spidey sense is going off and I feel a little bit weird. This feels a little salesy. But I try to remind people again, put yourself in your client's shoes. If they've seen wall art everywhere, if they sent you a room photo, now when you get to the planning meeting, if you don't ask them about wall art, that's weird. Now they're going to wonder, like, what do you think? I'm ugly? Like, you don't think my stuff should go on the wall? So it becomes strange if you're not asking these things because they're expecting it at that point.
I guess the first one is, you talked about photographers not leading the client through this expectation when they go to their website. They don't see examples of wall art. Do you know, or do you have photographers that are doing this well that you can share with us?
Yeah. So one of them is AllieAnd.co. She's Allie and Co. So it's AllieAnd.co. And I think it maybe redirects to Allie Ciarto. She does a phenomenal job of setting expectations for a handful of things. For wall art, in fact, something that I really love about Allie. So she's one of our users. She's up in East Lansing, Michigan, and she doesn't just show wall art. She shows wall art in her own home. And I think that's a really big distinction. She's showing people that not only do I believe that you should have this, but I believe it so much that, look, I have it too. Like, I'm walking the walk as well. So in fact, if you look at her slider, one of the first things that you'll see is like, see how we display wall art in our home. And then there's another one that I want to show you, and it is AmandaWaltmanPhoto.com. And if you look at hers, same thing there. She's telling you right off the bat. In fact, the first thing you see is your face deserves wall space, you know, and she's got this top level wall galleries menu item. And then if you scroll down further on her page, she's got this really sweet quiz that she has that's like, what's your wall gallery personality? And it leads you, after you go through this quiz, it like says, oh, okay, you're, you know, modern. Here are suggestions for you. So really, really slick things that some of these photographers are doing that I really love. In fact, she kind of stole this, that we have a quiz like this, but she made it a lot better. She did a much better job with it. And now I think I'm going to steal it back from her and figure out a way to make it for our clients, for our users, I mean.
This is great. Okay, so let me ask you. So let's say I'm a client of yours and you're using Swift Galleries. You've done a great shoot for me. I'm excited. And you said to me, picture where you want to hang this wall art. And I'm picturing a place in my lounge room right now. And at the moment, there's an outdated family photo. So what do you tell me? Do you email me instructions? Do you talk to me on the phone? How do you tell me how to get the best photo of this wall? And do I leave the existing photo up there or take that down to take my photos?
Yeah, great question. So we actually have this PSD file that all of our members have access to, and they can get in there and customize it, basically just drop their logo in, add their email address to it, whatnot. And then that walks the client through in text and in photos of how to take the best photo or wall photo for Swift Galleries. So step as far back away from the wall as you can, and then make sure you're taking the photo straight on. Make sure that you've got something in the photo that will give you context. So usually this is going to be like a window or a doorway. And this is more for the client than it is for the photographer to be able to calibrate so that the client can truly visualize, okay, that's what size that is. Because those are the things that they're familiar with, that doorway in their bedroom, you know, when they see that in the photo next to this gallery, then like, okay, that clicks for them. And then from there, we just need one thing on the wall where the wall art is going to go that you know the exact size of. The easiest way to do this is just tape a regular size piece of paper to the wall. So here in the States, that's just a letter 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. Just tape that to the wall. It's a known size. It's exact. And it's just really easy. And then as far as removing wall art, that's definitely preferable. But if the client doesn't want to go through all that, then, you know, the photographer could either use that wall art as the thing to calibrate Swift Galleries or go in and Photoshop that stuff out before they do the sales meeting.
Okay. And is an iPhone photo good enough?
Yep. I love this question because it comes down to what has become kind of my mantra in business and life. And it's this idea of make it work, then make it better. Like, in Swift Galleries, we have, I think, maybe a dozen and a half stock room photos that you can use. They're pre-calibrated. They look great. They're some of our past clients' homes. And, you know, those are five-stop HDRs that have been like massaged and loved in Photoshop before being used. And, you know, do you want that? Yeah, you'd love that. But if all you can get is an iPhone photo, then that's better than nothing. This always comes back to this concept of make it work, then make it better for me. It's like, just do something. I guess the reason I say that is because I think so many photographers use questions like that as excuses to not move forward. Well, I can't really do this because I don't go over to my clients' homes to take pictures of their walls. I can't really do this because that iPhone photo is going to be crap. Well, yeah, it is. You're right. But stop using that as an excuse. Make it work. Do something now. Then worry about making it better down the road. Get a few sales under your belt until you see that it's worth justifying the price of going over and taking photos beforehand or, you know, those kinds of things. So,
okay. So the photographers that are having the best success with this, are you suggesting or telling me that the photographers that are doing the best are actually going to the client's house and doing these photos themselves? They're getting permission to do this beforehand.
So I wouldn't say blanket statement, the photographers who were doing the best, because I actually know a handful of the ones that are doing really well with it are just using the stock photos.
Oh, okay. So the software comes with stock photos that you can use.
Yep. I think it's maybe 12, 15, something like that.
So you can still use this if the client hasn't taken the photos and you haven't had a chance to take the photos.
Yes, absolutely. And then there's a way to see like what size the galleries that you're working with are, kind of the total footprint of the gallery. That way, even if you don't have a photo of their room, you can ask them, hey, you know what? Just get me dimensions real quick. Got a tape measure. Tell me what size you have. And then even though it's not a photo of their room, you can double check and make sure that it is going to fit, though. You can put a gallery on that wall, you know, check out the gallery, look at the total footprint and say, yeah, okay, that will fit that space.
Okay, awesome. I want to get deeper into sales and selling in just one sec, Chris, but I know that as a software developer, you would obviously know who your competition is. Who are they? Like, who are your competitors in the market?
Actually, one of your local companies.
ProSelect.
ProSelect is definitely one of them. ProSelect is a much beefier application. And we used ProSelect when we were shooting full-time, but it had a ton of stuff in it that we didn't really use. This actually gets back to that original conversation we were having about PayKit. Swift Galleries and Preveal were kind of the realization of this idea that, like, I don't need all of these bells and whistles, but I'm certainly paying for them. So this idea of let's focus on one thing and do it really well. So yeah, I would say ProSelect is definitely one of them. Fundy, Andrew Funderburg's software is definitely another one. And then there are a handful of tablet-based software, stuff like Shoot and Sell are probably competitors, although they don't have, you know, kind of the sales aspects. It's a lot of just design, but it doesn't have all of the sales pieces to it as well.
So why would a photographer choose Swift Galleries over, say, ProSelect or Fundy's product?
Yeah. So, okay, there are a few things. In fact, I can tell you that we have photographers jumping ship from ProSelect to come to Swift Galleries for a couple of things. ProSelect is a bit outdated at this point. Some of our photographers say that they're embarrassed to use it. They say they feel like they're selling in Windows 98. And the price, you know, a lot of people are coming to the same realization that we came to, which is like, yeah, this has got a ton of things, but I don't use them, but I'm still paying for them. So I think those are two really big things. You know, I mean, we have the benefit. I don't ever want to knock another product. I think that ProSelect has done an amazing job in the industry, and it's easier for us because we can come in and look at what they've done and say, let's not do that, but let's do this. You know, I mean, so when I say, oh, I think we've built a much more intuitive product, I do believe that, but it's not really fair to them because we were able to look at what they have done and say, how can we make it better? You know, when they have at this point all of this technical debt, you know, they've built out this beast of a program, to start from scratch for them would be very difficult. So, you know, I think we're a much more intuitive program. Our pricing is obviously much better, and we focus more on the wall art design and the in-person sales meeting itself. We don't have a lot of the bells and whistles, the album design, the card designs, all of that stuff that they have in there. And then as far as Fundy goes, Fundy is a fun one. I think mostly because I'm friends with Andrew and I want to just trash talk his company, but I can't.
You go for it.
No, I really can't. He is just such a good dude. Okay, so we're going to go quick story time. When we first launched Preveal, I sent Andrew a beta version of it and said, hey, I would love for you to check this out. You've never heard of me before. You know, I was just, I joke around, I was just a guy who pressed a button for a living. I was just a photographer at that point. It was like, I think this would be cool. Let's build it. So we built it and I sent him over this thing. Hey, we built this thing. I would love for you to check it out. And the first thing he sent was, hey, we're thinking about building something like this one day. And I wanted to let you know before I opened this, are you cool with that? Which to me is like, that's a stand-up dude right there. Yeah. So then he opened it and I said, yeah, no big deal. Go ahead and open it. I would love to hear what you think. And he told me it wasn't good enough, which is awesome. He's like, yeah, you know, I'd love to tell my people about this, but you need to do this, 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 and this. And I was like, okay, that sucks. Like, you know, it was like he just rained on my parade. But he was true to his word. We did those things. I sent it over and he was a really big supporter of ours until they released competing apps. So yeah, that's the backstory on Andrew. I respect him as a software developer. I respect him as a person. I just think he's a good dude. In fact, he keeps saying that if we do booth at WPPI, that he wants to come and sell my product and then I can go and sell his product over at his booth. And I keep telling him that I'm not going to do it. I'm going to sell my own at his booth. But yeah, he's a stand-up dude, and he's made just incredible software. The place that I think that Swift Galleries is a good distinction from what Andrew has built is the ability to run this all operating systems, all devices. We actually have a lot of users who will upload from their iMac, design from their iMac or their MacBook, but then they want to use a tablet to sell. And they can do that in Swift Galleries without having to get any extra licenses, without having to download anything. In fact, you can't even do that in Fundy. Fundy is just desktop, and we don't require additional licenses. You don't have to worry about installing anything. You don't have to worry about downloading anything. You don't have to worry about updates. All of these things just happen on the fly. Dude, you put me in a weird position asking this question because I'm like, I don't want to say bad things about these people. I respect these people. I think we've done a bit better job at making a more intuitive app than they have. But granted, they have, you know, a suite of other products that they have to focus on. We really have, you know, Swift Galleries and then kind of these other things that I talked about at the beginning of the interview. But from a software perspective, specifically for, you know, design and sales, this is our baby. So we get to spend all of our time on it.
Let me come to your rescue. Let me change the subject. You know, you touched on cost of sales earlier, and you know, I'd love to talk a little bit about pricing before we get into actually selling product. And you talked about 25% cost of sales. And immediately I go to the 8x10. You know, if that's going to cost me $5, does that mean I should sell it for 20 with the 25% cost of sales? Like, is that enough?
Yeah, go for it. No, I'm just joking. No, I think that it's a common misconception is this idea of like, okay, 25% cost of sale means that needs to be a quarter of what I charge. So anything times four, you know, whatever my costs are times four. But people forget that they need to be charging for their time. Like, how long did it take you? This whole idea of pricing, you have to keep in mind that your client may only buy one thing. Let's go to that 8x10. You're talking about the 8x10. Can I just charge $20 for that 8x10? And I know there are some people out there who are saying I can't charge $20 for an 8x10 because, you know, Walmart sells it for $4 or whatever they sell it for, you know? So if we look at that 8x10, if that's the only thing my client buys from a session with me, what went into producing that one 8x10? Well, I had to shoot the session. Okay, cool. No big deal. My session fee covers that. So we could kind of brush that off. But I had to import that card. I had to cull all of those images. I had to do either light edits or full edits, depending on how you run your business. We typically recommend doing light edits. We call them Lightroom edits, basically just global edits. You know, so Adrian would go in, correct all my exposures, make all of my drunken, crooked photos look straight, and correct any white balance issues, you know, and that would kind of be our light edit. We wouldn't do any retouching, anything like that. We would go into a sales meeting with just a light edit done. And of course, I didn't do any of the cull or any of those light edits. So when I got to the point that it was like, oh, okay, it's time to put full edits on these, I thought I was amazing. I'm like, oh my gosh, I only take great photos and they're all straight and exposed perfectly. And she's like, yeah, no, you kind of suck at this, Chris. Like, I had to struggle to find stuff that worked. So anyway, that's an aside. You know, you have to cull those. You have to do your light edits. You have to import those into Swift Galleries or what have you, whatever it is that you use. And then you have to do the sales meeting. So you had all of this time that was eaten up that even if they only buy that one product, you still have to do all of those things. So at least those things have to be counted into the cost of your products. And then you can also start looking at things like, okay, well, my 8x10 cost me $5. Okay, well, does that, you know, include any mounting? Does it include any texture on the face of that print, or what kind of packaging are you doing? So all of these things need to be taken into account when you start pricing a product.
If I'm going to take into account the time that goes into the shoot, the edit, the cull, the Lightroom edit, and the sales session, how can I really factor that in if I don't know what the client's going to buy? I mean, they might buy one 8x10, but they might buy, you know, two 20x30s. You know, I guess what I'm getting at, if I'm a new photographer, I've tuned in to hear you on this episode of the podcast, and I'm stuck with my pricing. I do not know what to charge. And I actually got this email yesterday from a listener. How much should I charge for an 8x10? Is $15 enough? Because it's only costing me three. And I'm like, well, no, it's nowhere near enough. So what advice do you have for that photographer?
Yeah, so this kind of goes full circle to something that we talked about earlier, which you threw a curveball at me right there at the end of that question. I was prepared to start talking about the things that you can do to kind of bring those scary prices down. But then you said, if I don't know what to expect, if I don't know what they're going to buy, And this comes all the way back to what we talked about earlier about setting expectations. You know, we talked a ton about setting expectations for product, but you need to be setting really three different expectations on your website, your blog, social media, and all of your communications. Basically, everywhere someone touches your brand, you need to have three expectations set. One of those is product. We talked a bunch about that already. The other is price and process. So I want to make sure before a client ever even shakes my hand, they have an idea of what products I want them to buy, how much they're going to pay for those products, and what process we're going to go through for them to actually get those products in their hands. And if I do those things appropriately, if I do those correctly, then this idea of what are they going to buy at the end doesn't come up anymore because those expectations are set. They already know how much everything's going to cost them. They already know what people come to me for. And they already know the process that we're going to go through to get those products in their hands. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So
premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Just quickly, when does your client or when do you suggest you tell the client about the price? End of the planning meeting?
Yeah, end of the planning meeting. Okay. Yes, exactly. And again, remember, you're setting an expectation on your website. So on your website, you're not going to put your entire menu out there. You're going to put something like, our sessions are $150 and custom wall art galleries start at $1,200. Like, that's it. That's enough. We've set an expectation. They have something to grab onto. Now the planning meeting is just kind of filling out that expectation. It's showing them how they can pay you that much. Because some people will be like, $1,200? Well, they'll contact you. If they move forward, they're saying it's this kind of implied, okay, yeah, let's do that. I'm okay with this. I don't have to charge a minimum order fee or anything like that because I've set that expectation. And now they come and they see how they can spend that much. Because at the end of the planning meeting, I'm going to say, okay, here's everything that we talked about. And this is what you're looking at paying for all of those things. And then Julia jokes around. I think it's hilarious. She says that she does this right at the door at the very end of their planning meeting. And then she kind of pushes them out the door so that they can throw up in the parking lot and not on her studio floor.
Love it.
But it is this idea of like, you have set an expectation. Is there going to be some like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. They're going to be like, oh, that's how I spend that much. But they'll go and, you know, you've built up all this excitement. You've showed them all of this stuff that you can do for them. This is so much different than them seeing a price online and trying to decide if they're going to hire you or not. They've already met you. They've already seen how much attention you've paid to them and how much you've already started customizing the experience for them.
I love it. Mate, I can hear how passionate you are and how excited you get about talking about this. Do you teach this stuff online as well? Like, do you get this stuff with Swift Galleries or do you have webinars earlier? Like, how do we find out about more of this stuff?
Yeah. Come on over to swiftgalleries.com. We have this kind of stuff up available for replay all the time. And I usually do anywhere from 1 to 4 webinars a month. We like doing our webinars over here and all of them revolve around this same kind of stuff, sales strategies. Sometimes we'll touch on marketing if I'm feeling fancy, but usually it's about sales strategies, pricing, stuff like that.
Okay. So if we opt in, we put our email address in where you're asking for it, then we'll get told about when these webinars are on and happening.
Absolutely. Yep.
Fantastic. Yep. Chris, this has been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you so much.
Man, this was a blast. Thanks so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Chris Scott as much as I did. Chris, if you are listening, mate, thank you so much again for coming on the show, for sharing as much as what you did about your processes, what you're teaching, what you've learned, and what you know works, mate. It was enlightening for me. I know I'm going to be making some changes to my business as a result of what you shared. I know the listener is going to love exactly what you had to say in today's episode, mate. So again, a massive, massive thanks. For you, the listener, if you have a follow-up question for Chris, something that I didn't ask that you wish that I did, you can hit him up in the comments area of the show notes. You'll find them at photobizx.com/230. So photobizx.com/230. You'll find the comments area at the very bottom of the show notes. And before all that, you'll find links to anything and everything that Chris mentioned. You'll find some examples of his fantastic boudoir work. It's all there in the show notes for you. And if you are a premium member, I'll be adding Chris to the members Facebook group right after this interview goes live. So you'll have access to him there inside the group if you have any follow-up questions as well. And that's something that I do with every single guest. Add them to the members Facebook group so you do have close and easy access to the guests right after the interviews to ask more follow-up questions, to get clarification or anything, to go into more detail if you need to. Alrighty, we're going to jump into this segment that I recorded with Dave Cowling from D&M Wedding Films in Sydney. This is a product that is specifically designed for Australian photographers at this stage. But if you're listening from overseas, I think this is worth listening to. I think, well, it might even give you an idea for a business of your own. And if not, I think this is something that we're going to see more and more of as photographers who aren't supplying videography to our wedding clients. Anyway, here's Dave. Let me know what you think. I've got Dave Cowling from D&M Wedding Films. He's a Sydney wedding photographer with me right now. And the idea of this segment came about when I saw an email from Dave talking about a new program that he started up. It's called Key Moments. And he describes it as a concept offering wedding videos as a wholesale product to be offered through photographers and venues. And he says the aim is to make booking video as easy as checking a box on your price list. Super simple. Dave, welcome, mate.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
So I guess let's start with a bit of background for the listener. Sort of, who is Dave Cowling? What's D&M Wedding Films?
So I filmed my first wedding back in 2004. People often ask what the D&M stands for. It's whatever you want it to be, really. My wife's name is Michelle, so that kind of works on the Dave and Michelle level. But most people, a lot of people assume it's deep and meaningful. And, you know, when you're dealing in weddings, that works too. So whichever works for you. So since then, I've done close to 1,000 weddings, mainly video. I've done some photography, but mainly on the video side of things. And yeah, I think as I'm getting older, doing the 12-plus hour days is getting more taxing. So Key Moments was kind of born out of an idea of a way to use my skills and not kill myself doing it. That was kind of part of the reason.
But you say getting old. You're not that old.
I'm 44. So, you know, when you've been doing it since 2004, you know, like I had a lot more energy then. So,
well, I'm not going to dive too deep into this, mate, because you're a little bit younger than me.
Okay.
So you're a spring chicken.
Okay.
But I totally hear you, mate. The long days, they kill me. I mean, that's one of the reasons I changed the mirrorless. I was just getting tired of carrying the heavy gear around. And I can imagine it's twice as bad for you guys.
There's a lot of gear. Yeah, we definitely carry a lot of gear with us. And a lot of it for us is just in case gear, you know. It's just in case you need to use that particular piece of gear or lighting or audio, that we've just got to carry it. You know, I'm quite jealous of the photographers who turn up with one bag slung over their shoulder and they finish at 10 o'clock, they're in the car by 10:05. We're still packing up at 10:30.
I feel for you. Right, so tell us about Key Moments. So is the idea that, you know, me being a photographer, that if a client asks me about a videographer, instead of me trying to refer local guys that I know, I can come to you and I can get one of your guys to shoot for me, use my branding and have an upsell at the same time? Like, is that the idea behind it?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. So yeah, it was born out of the idea also of, I was hearing a lot of photographers and seeing some chatter online of guys saying that they were being cut out of conversations where clients are asking, do you do video as well? And even though they have studios that they work with and refer and might have great relationships with, if they couldn't say yes to that question, they were being cut out of the conversation. So that was part of the reasoning behind putting this together as well, is providing an avenue for photographers to say, yes, we do video. And that's exactly what it is we then supply the people to shoot it. We edit it and upload it unbranded or with your branding on it. So the client need never know that you've outsourced anything. And yeah, that's the whole idea, is that we do it all in the background for you. So that was kind of the idea behind, that was part of the reason for putting it together, was to service those guys who are just photographers, not offering video, without diluting your service by getting like a junior in to do it or something like that.
Okay. Well, let's take this from my point of view as a photographer, because I don't offer video.
Yeah.
I'm often asked, do you supply video or can you do video? And I end up referring some local guys. So if I want to use Key Moments, how does it work? So if a client asks me if I can do video, I can say yes. Are you supplying someone to shoot the whole day?
No. So we keep it really simple. So it's just ceremony and speeches that we're offering through this service. And the reason for that is anything beyond that is where it starts to get into the creative side. and preferences as far as the style of shooting. So we want to keep it very simple. It allows you to get in the conversation by saying, yes, you do video. If the client starts saying, oh, we want full day coverage, you can refer it on to us and we'll pay a referral fee for that and refer it to someone within our network. Or you can do what you've always done and refer it on to one of your local people who you work with regularly. So the whole idea is to be able to get into that conversation. And also, I don't want to, I guess, get on the wrong side of the video guys that I know as well. Some of them might think that, you know, we're affecting their market, and I don't think it does, it will at all. A lot of the photographers that I speak to say it's either 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 are the numbers that I hear most regularly, depending on their market, as to how many weddings they do that have video guys there. So I'm aiming at the others. So if it is 1 in 5, this is aimed at the other 4 to encourage them to have something on video from the day. And yeah, that's why we called it key moments. We think the speeches and the ceremonies are the crux of the day. So it's designed as a product to capture that, get the photographers in the game, allow you to make a little bit more money. I mean, there's other benefits to it that, you know, you've got a lot more control as the photographer over the whole day. You've only got one videographer. You don't have a whole team of people running around. I mean, I know the way we work is to be very candid, very natural, the way we work through D&M, but I know not all video studios are like that. So there's the age-old photographer and videographer kind of arm wrestle that happens occasionally. So it minimizes that too.
Yeah. So is it one of your guys, or is this contractors that you found around Australia to service this business?
Yeah, so I mean, my background is I ran a thing called Exposed Down Under for about 5 years with Rochelle Morris in Melbourne, and we ran educational workshops in Sydney and Melbourne and brought people in all around the country, in fact, all around the world, and presenters from all over the world came. So we got to know a lot of people through doing that. So the people that I've gone to, first of all, have been guys that I've known for a long time. Often they're people like me who have been doing it for a very long time and are quite happy to take an easier shooting gig in doing, you know, ceremony and or speeches. So experienced people and people that I've found, you know, just through video networks who I know their work is good, they're solid. We do have kind of minimum standards as to what I'd accept to send someone out under our...
So you're doing all the checking, the background stuff, and checking the quality of video and the shooting and the sound that the people that you're going to be sending out are putting together.
Exactly, yeah. So the way we do it is that, I mean, it's designed to be a simple product. The deliverable is that it would be 2-camera coverage, but just as an example, I insist that it's shot with 3 cameras, and they've all got to be, you know, similar cameras. You know, I don't want someone turning up with a Sony, a Canon and a Panasonic. So little things like that, we make sure that it's going to look good. Yeah, we want to make sure that we're making your brands look good as well.
Okay. I want to dive a bit deep into it in just a sec, but you mentioned that we did say that it's sort of an Australian project at this stage. Do you think this is going to get copied overseas, or is it already going overseas that you know of?
I haven't heard of it being done anywhere else. It was an original idea on my part. So no, I presume it probably will get copied. The hardest part to copy is the platform, and that's one thing that I've got set up, which is it allows the photographers to know instantly to be able to confirm availability. So if you're in a consultation with a client and they say they're interested in having ceremony and or speeches covered on video, you can jump on our website and instantly confirm availability. So to do that, I've got a lot of calendar back end sort of stuff going on, and that would be the hard thing to replicate for anyone.
Oh, okay. So there could be an opportunity for a listener overseas, a particular videographer, to, you know, to run with this as well.
There could be. Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to franchise the idea.
Cool. So, okay, so let's just dive in a little deeper on the way it works. So let's say I book a videographer through you. They come to shoot, you say ceremony and the speeches. Does that mean, like, you know, as soon as the bride and groom walk out the door of the chapel or down the aisle of the garden wedding, that's it, video is packed up? Or do they capture a little bit of the congratulations and all those sort of things happening outside? Or is it strictly the ceremony?
Yeah, we pretty much draw the line at just the ceremony and just the speeches. I mean, some of the ones that I've done over the past kind of 6 months, look, if they cut the cake straight away after speeches and I can get a shot easily enough, I'll let the camera roll and include that. But there's got to be a line as to where it starts getting into the creative sort of side of it. And that's why we've said ceremony is from when your flower girl or bridesmaids start walking down to when they walk out as husband and wife. So, yeah, pretty much draw that line. And if they want anything above that, it's a case of refer it on.
Okay. And what about the speeches? Because I know I much prefer when my weddings or my couples have their speeches all in a row, all straight after each other, and it's done and dusted. But some couples, they insist on, you know, having two after the entree, two after the main meal, a couple after dessert. So how does that work?
So we say that it's up to an hour for ceremony or speeches, and then above that, it's charged at additional time rates. So if they want to spread it out, they can, but it's probably going to cost them a little bit more to do that.
Okay, so they'll pay more for the hourly rate, but you're still going to be covering the speeches only, not the stuff in between.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so you're paying for the time for the videographer to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. Cool. And what about cost?
So we charge a flat rate, which is currently $770 for ceremony or speeches, or $1,320 for both, and they're GST inclusive. And as to what you charge the client, it's whatever you want. So we kind of have a recommended retail. We'd say, you know, $995 if it's one service or the other, or you might go around $1,695 if they're doing both. But really, it's up to you. Some photographers might want to add it just as an add-on and make nothing from it. Others might want to do it and make a lot more. And depends on your market, on your clientele. I've had one photographer say, I'd easily, you know, sell that for $2,000. I was like, cool, if you can, knock yourself out. So, yeah, I don't dictate what you sell it for. You can sell it for whatever you think you can.
Okay, cool. And then I'm imagining that the videographer doesn't meet the client. So I'm doing all the face-to-face meetings. I just tell them they're going to be a videographer there and they turn up and do their thing on the day. Do I know who the videographer is going to be as a photographer?
Yes, yeah, so we'd definitely let you know beforehand who is going to turn up so that you know. And often it'll be people that, you know, if you've been in the game for a while, you probably will know these people. So they're all experienced guys, as I said, that I've worked with and known for years. So, yeah, you'll definitely know ahead of time who it is. Down the track, I'm looking at adding a review function. So on the website, you'll be able to jump on and you, as our client, will be able to leave a review for your for the videographer you've worked with and put in requests for that person in future if you wanted to do that. But that's probably down Facebook with the website development.
Okay, got it. One thing I was going to ask you, I know that in my experience, I've seen some pretty shabbily dressed videographers and photographers in the past. Like, is the guy or the girl that you're sending over to cover the video going to be dressed appropriately?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's something that we specify, that we have dress standards that are dress pants, collared shirt, smart shoes. And yeah, if you ever have anyone who turns up not dressed that way, we want to know about it. So, but we specify that up front to the videographers as well, that that's the standard that they're required to deliver as part of the service.
Okay, cool. You take hold of the footage after the wedding's been photographed, or does the videographer that covered the wedding, does he look after the post-processing?
No, we do. So our terms with the videographers is that they have 48 hours to get it to us, either by courier or upload, and we edit it pretty much straight away. So we have a guarantee that we'll have it back to the photographer within 4 weeks, and you know, we'll always aim to over-deliver on that as well.
Okay, and so what do I get as a photographer? Do I get a link to a Dropbox folder? Do you send me a USB? And what format is the video in?
So it's an MP4 file of each of those, you know, of the ceremony and speeches if they're doing both, and it's uploaded just via Dropbox for you. And if you want to supply us with your branding, we'll put your branding on the end of it, just basically a logo coming up, or we can put it at the beginning or the end, whichever you prefer, or you can have it completely unbranded. And that would then allow you to put it on your own USB to deliver it physically to the client. Or you can upload it to Dropbox for them, whichever way you want to deliver it. There's a whole lot of different video delivery platforms out there, things like MediaZilla, which some people might want to look into, that if they're photographers, they might not be aware of things like that, which are basically online delivery platforms that have menus and all that sort of thing. But I'd imagine for a simple sort of service like this, where it is really just ceremony and speeches, that probably wouldn't be necessary. You just put it on your USB as you deliver with your photos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mate, you've talked a lot about the videography and I've asked about that, but what about the sound, the audio? You know, are they going to be recording with lapel mics? Is it just shotgun mics? Is it going to sound good?
Definitely lapel mics as a minimum. My background before I got into video is as an audio engineer, so I place a very high emphasis on getting good audio. So that's part of what we do, is just talk to the videographers about what gear they have and how they'd approach it. It is often difficult with ceremony and speeches, depending on what you're faced with. We're often faced with priests who don't want to wear mics and don't want to give you access to sound systems and all that sort of stuff. So it can be difficult. We would, as a minimum, put a mic on the groom, a mic on any lectern if there's readings, find out if there's musicians and put mics near them as well. So absolutely do the best we can with whatever we're faced with. But occasionally, yeah, you do come across priests. One of my favourites called me a parasite one time for trying to put a microphone on him.
They're charming, aren't they, some of them?
Oh, yeah. Welcome to my church, parasite.
Is that really how he said it?
No. He said, oh, you people are all parasites. It was basically inferring that, you know, we're making money off the sacrament of marriage. And, you know, I questioned whether he was being paid to be there.
I was going to say, as opposed to the donation, in air quotes,
yeah,
that they asked for to get married there.
Exactly. You know, thankfully we don't come across them too often, but occasionally you get people, sometimes it's celebrants who just say, no, you're not putting a mic on me, you're not getting a line out from my PA. So, yeah, we have some methods to try and get around that. Sometimes it's, you know, approaching the priest with the groom beside you. So if they're going to say no, they've got to say no to him and understand that it is ultimately them that they're saying no to, not me as the videographer.
Yeah, sure.
So things like that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Just on the post-processing, what do you guys do? Like, do you have like little fade in and fade out? Are you adjusting levels? Like, to what extent are you going to with the edit?
As I mentioned, it's a two-camera edit, so visually it's just, it'll be cutting between the two cameras. Audio, we just flatten out the audio levels to make sure it's as consistent as it can be, and just basic cleanups. I mean, it doesn't require a lot usually, unless something has gone wrong or there's been wind noise or a siren or something like that going off in the background. So usually it's pretty straightforward. For ceremony and speeches, it's all pretty much live. The only thing that we would sometimes truncate is the signing of the register, just because in real time that could be pretty boring, so we might just cut that down. But otherwise, everything's just real time with live audio.
Cool. You mentioned earlier that if a client is asking for something more substantial than, say, ceremony and speeches, then, you know, we could refer them to you. And you mentioned their referral fee. What's the go with that?
Yeah, so at the moment we've got that at $100, you know, and the photographer can just let us know that they referred it, and if it comes through, we'll happily pay that $100 referral fee. That may change in the future, might go up in the future, but at the moment that's what it's at. So, but I mean, I know a lot of photographers already have existing relationships, so that's, you know, we're not trying to incur on those. I'm sure there's lots of relationships with existing videographers in your area. And a lot of the videographers won't want to do this sort of work. You know, like when they can go out and do a full day wedding, just doing ceremonial speeches won't be attractive to them. So there's still definitely scope to refer to your favorite videographer. But yeah, if you want to refer through us, we can do it that way as well and pay that referral fee.
Let's say I'm a newer photographer in my area. I'm on the Central Coast.
Yep.
And I don't have a relationship with any other videographers at the moment. I don't know who to recommend that I can trust. Can I refer you at D&M Wedding Films?
Yeah.
And then you will find someone in my area?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So that's the way it works for us. If anyone jumps on keymoments.com.au and goes through to make a booking, you don't have to complete it. You just can go through the process and you'll see that there are a whole lot of areas that we've got covered, pretty much most of the major cities, the capital cities, and some of the regional, popular regional areas. And we're expanding on that all the time. And I have guys based in those areas. So it's not like someone from D&M is going to go and shoot a wedding in Perth. It's a Perth-based person. And those are the guys that we would refer on to if it was a full booking as well. So it's all, yeah, local people working within those areas or close to those areas.
Fantastic. Awesome. All right. First of all, is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I guess one of the things that a few people have asked is just, you know, what if something goes wrong? And we've tried to make that as foolproof as possible, in that if something can be fixed, of course, we'll fix it. That's the basic thing. But if it can't be fixed, we've got a guarantee behind it that we'll not only refund what you've paid us, but we'll refund what the client has paid you. So I think that's as fair as we can possibly be on that. And, you know, as everyone knows, things do occasionally go wrong. It's pretty rare. We take all possible precautions to make sure that they don't. But if something goes drastically wrong, you know, we want you to know that we've got you covered.
Okay, so that, I mean, that brings up the point that a contract, so who, I mean, I have a wedding contract, a wedding photography contract with my clients. Do the client enter into a contract with you at key moments, or is the contract only with me, the photographer?
The contract's only with you. I think it would get confusing if you introduced us to them. But we have, just even on the website, there's a link to a whole stack of clauses that you might want to add to your contract to cover you for the video side of things. So they're all pretty standard kind of clauses, but things that photographers might not have thought about. And yeah, I'm available anytime if anyone has questions to either email or call me when they're doing their initial bookings, just to cover off a few things that you just want to make sure you talk about with the clients, just to make sure that they get the best result from video as well.
Okay, so if I want to give this a go, I want to try this out, is it better to have a phone call with you first, or can I just go straight to the Key Moments website and start using it?
You can literally go there straight away. In process, it will ask you to register, just so that we know, obviously, who's making the booking. And that's my security process to make sure that it is coming from a photographer. This is not something that we're offering direct to the general public, to brides and grooms. So aside from these channels through photographers, that's the only place that we're kind of advertising this. There's no SEO on the website or anything, so that it's not going to get found by your bride and groom. That's not the purpose of it. So yeah, if you want to give it a go, it's as easy as jumping on the website. There's some more information there. But if you've got any questions, my phone number's there as well. Just give me a buzz and I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has. I've got an info pack that I can send out to people if they want to get in contact with me, either at D&M Wedding Films. So it's dave@dnmweddingfilms.com.au or info@keymoments.com.au. Both of those will come to me. Or give me a call. Yeah.
Fantastic. And the website itself is keymoments.com.au.
That's the one. Yeah, that's it.
Mate, this is a great idea. I love it. And I would not be surprised if I see this sort of service popping up around the world, mate. It's fantastic. Congratulations. And I hope it's an awesome success.
Awesome. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate the time that you've given me. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for coming on, mate. I do appreciate it. For you, listener, you can check out more of what Dave was talking about over at keymoments.com.au. Again, I've got the comments area in the show notes if you want more details. Particularly if you're an overseas photographer, I'd love to get your view. Is this something that you can see popping up in your area? Is this something you can see taking off where you live, wherever that might be? I know that it's something that's attractive to me because I don't supply video or offer video through Impact Images. And this seems like an easy solution that I can offer my clients with my branding and generate a little bit more profit as well. So I'm definitely going to be trying this out if I get the chance, or when I get the chance. And what did you think about the referral fee as well that Dave was talking about? I know that I have done something like that in the past before. I actually tried to do that on a wholesale level with service providers in my area. It didn't actually work for me. I sent out a personalized letter to a whole range of different service providers further up the food chain than me. So mainly wedding reception venues and some celebrants as well that I know were getting booked and were popular. And I offered them a referral fee if they recommended me and I got the booking as the photographer. So, like I said, it didn't actually work for me. I find that rewarding those referrers with a gift worked more effectively than offering them an incentive in the first place. But I do love the idea of a referral fee, but I know that I would be happy to pay a referral fee if someone recommended or referred me and I made the booking. Definitely worthwhile. So I don't know if you're doing something like that in your business. I'd love to hear about it if you are, either in the comments area or inside the Facebook group. And if that's something you'd like to explore more, then let me know and I can get some more details and talk a little bit more about that as well in the future. Or find a photographer that's having success with that and chase them up for an interview. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the podcast. If you've got any questions or comments, or you need to get in touch, or you have a photographer you want to recommend to be interviewed for PhotoBizX, or even a topic that you'd like covered or a question added to the interviews, then you can find me via email. It's andrew@photobizx.com. All right, that's it for this week. Have an awesome week yourself, and I will chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.